Well, joining me on the line is Mickey Faulb. Mickey Faulb is the Mercenary Geologist, and you can check him out at mercenarygeologist.com. Mickey, how are you today?
Well, Dave, and you?
Very, very good. Well, the markets were, they seem to be bouncing all over the place in the last few days, I've noticed.
Yes, they have, and we had a major market correction today. All the major markets, Dow, S&P 500, NASDAQ, Russell 2000, Venture Index, everything down today. So all the talking heads on TV are raising alarm that the correction is in, at least today.
Well, I saw Ms. Yellen was on television last night, and she was talking about the specter of possibly raising interest rates.
Yeah, well, I don't see that happening. I think we're stuck with ZERP for quite some time, no end in sight. But really, the Fed's the one that's created this bull market in equities, and also have downplayed the commodities. Although gold was up almost 3% today, hit a 2-week high, closed at 13.18. Silver actually got above $20 at the close here.
How's copper looking today? Copper's one of those bellwether commodities, right?
Yeah, well, copper's been mucking around here for since the correction came in, whenever that was, if memory serves, probably about 6 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
Copper has floated up and down below $3. It closed the day at $3.02. It's basically the same old thing. Everybody's probably heard the expression, when the U.S. sneezes, the world catches cold.
That's right.
Well, when China hiccups, the copper markets get a hiatal hernia. So, China hiccup today, imports and export data were both off, and so copper came off a penny today, but you know, the demand still remains strong. Most analysts have forecast a very small surplus this year. I've seen from 81,000 tons to up to 400,000 tons. Let's put that into perspective. The world uses well over 60,000 tons of copper a year. So these surpluses they're talking about, which is so much upset the market this year, would be a little bit more than one day to, at the high end, 6 days of world consumption. So we can pretty much say the copper market is in good supply-demand balance.
Absolutely. Well, it seems to be balanced, stabling itself off anyway in terms of where the growth is.
Well, yeah, the growth is in China and India. Let's face it, the growth is driven by Eastern Asia. The U.S. is growing slowly. Europe is flat. So we're really dependent on China, or Chindia, as my friend Frank Holmes likes to call it, for the growth of copper market. But it all makes sense. You know, we've got something on the order of, do the math here, 80,000 more people on the planet every day. Most of those are being born in places in the world that don't have electricity, i.e. a good part of rural Eastern Asia, rural South America, and Africa.
Well, what else are you going to do in the dark, Mick?
Yeah, well, 25% of the world. Good point, Dave. 25% of the world, basically, where the growth is occurring, can't turn a light switch on at night, and it takes copper to transmit electricity.
Mm-hmm.
So, long-term bull on the copper market.
Well, let's talk about, if we can, Osisko and what's going on with
Osisko and Goldcorp and Yamana, the saga that continues to go on and on. Today, Goldcorp upped its bid for Osisko. They trumped the rather convoluted deal that Yamana and Osisko are trying to put together, which was a 50-50 deal. But Goldcorp upped their bid today by 28%, if you can imagine that, over their original bid. So they upped it from $2.6 to $3.6 billion to buy out Osisko. That translates to $7.65 a share. The Osisko Yamana 50/50 deal is valued at $7.60 a share for Osisko.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's all about the Malartic mine, the flagship of the company. You know, you look at Osisko, they don't have a lot that's attractive other than Malartic. And earlier this week, Q1 production came out record 140,000 ounces. Now compare that to Goldcorp 660,000 ounces per quarter, and that would be a significant bump. So we'll see. The saga goes on. This is not over yet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think Goldcorp misplayed this whole thing. They underbid to begin with.
Yep.
Osisko threw up a lawsuit and threw up some roadblocks and finally found their white knight with Yamana.
Mm-hmm.
Now Goldcorp's had to come in and up their bid 28%. That's just unheard of.
Well, and it still really works out to being a nickel per share more than what Yamana is offering.
Yeah, exactly. So, I haven't really looked at this in detail today, but I don't imagine that this Goldcorp bid's going to, with a nickel, is going to really sway a bunch of shareholders. I don't think this is over by any stretch of the imagination.
Well, according to Goldcorp's chief, Chuck Jeans, he said in a statement today that his offer represents a straightforward and superior value to Osisko shareholders. We're talking about a nickel, though.
Yeah, but, well, I will agree with the fact that it is a straightforward deal because it's a buyout, a complete buyout,
right,
whereas the Yamano-Cisco deal is somewhat convoluted. But like I said, this is not over yet. So,
well, yeah, because, Yamano's got until next Thursday to make a counteroffer under the terms of the deal. And one of the things I just read, was that Osisko will have to pay Yamana $70 million if Osisko ends up merging with Goldcorp or another rival.
Yeah, well,
so
Yamana looks like they're kind of in the catbird seat right now, doesn't
absolutely.
It?
Absolutely. Well, I mean, this is the problem when it's a perceived hostile takeover, right? I mean, you know,
yep,
you get people's backs up when you do that, right?
Yes, you do. So, yep, so some news this week would have to be the palladium market hit a 2.5-year high today. Presently at $791. You know, the fundamentals of both platinum and palladium look very positive right now, with strong auto demand, especially in the U.S. and China, ongoing South African strikes, the geopolitical ramifications of Russia and the Ukraine. Russia is a big supplier of palladium to the West. The sanctions being put on Russia, we'll see what that has to do with it. Interestingly enough, the since we've been tracking this ratio, which I've been doing for quite some time now, the platinum-palladium ratio continues to go down, basically because palladium is more of an industrial metal.
Right.
We just need to go out and be able to find a good platinum-palladium deposit in U.S. or Canada in a safe geopolitical jurisdiction. That's what's wanting at this point.
Well, you're a geologist. I mean, where do you think we should be looking in North America?
Well, I think up in the far north of Canada, there's some interesting prospects up there. It's just very difficult. I mean, there's been lots of projects in northern Canada, some in the U.S., but the geology is permissive in North America. We just can't seem to find good high-grade deposits yet.
Mm.
And I have to say that the companies that are promoting the deposits that we know about now do not attract me at all.
No, exactly. Well, you know, you mentioned the automobile industry, and one of the things that came out yesterday, of course, was a huge recall, one of the largest recalls in recent history by Toyota. Some several million cars are being recalled across North America, across the world, actually. I think it's something like
right.
So, I mean, that's got to affect valuation as well, doesn't it?
Well, I don't know that that necessarily does. There's. I don't know how that would affect the overall demand for new automobiles, and that's what really drives catalytic converter platinum palladium use. Certainly wasn't good news for Toyota, but You know, I'm a good old American libertarian hillbilly redneck, and I'm looking out over the farm right now, and I've got five vehicles sitting here, and every one of them's American-made, so I don't really care about Toyota.
There you go. Well, again, you know, it's all about having the right product, right?
And well, it certainly is, and I don't know if one car company is better than the other. Here's what I know. Automobiles are depreciating assets. It makes no sense to buy a depreciating asset on debt and on time. So I don't buy new vehicles. I buy used vehicles that have low mileage. So.
Well, there you go. And that's good advice for anybody out there, quite frankly. I mean, we purchased a new vehicle, my wife and I, many years ago. And, I mean, we drove it till it was dead. But, I mean, the long and short of it was, as you said, the valuation was, the minute you drive it off the lot, you're losing, what, 12, 13% of the value?
At best, I think you would lose that much, maybe quite a lot more.
Exactly. So, yeah. Well, what's the buzz this week, Mick? Can you tell the listeners what the big buzz in the markets is this week?
Well, the big buzz today is the market correction. The big buzz worldwide would be the continuing situation in Ukraine and Russia. We don't know what's going to happen there. I mean, I've spoken about my take on that. You know, the Crimea is Russian, so get over it, Obama. I don't think that this sell-off we had today, does not feel like the major correction that we need to have in the market. The venture exchange is flat as predicted. I wrote a piece a couple of weeks ago called It's Getting Better, and it is getting better. We're hanging around that 1,000 mark on the index. We look for a better market in 2014, but the real concern here is liquidity continues to remain low. We're only trading about 70 million shares a day, and that's not going to move this market up. You know, here's an anecdotal evidence of that. I hold 35 stocks in the exploration and mining sector. Today, 8 of those had 0 trades. And of those 35, nearly half, 17, traded less than 10,000 shares a day.
Wow.
Until we get some interest in this market, we're going to continue to muck about.
No, absolutely. And, I mean, you know, you make a good point. I mean, I think the number is still hovering around 80%, or between 75 and 80% of the companies that are listed on there are trading below a dime.
Yep. I will defer to John Kaiser for those statistics. I haven't talked to John recently, but the majority of this market is in the toilet, and they will get flushed at some point. It just depends on how long it's going to take. The encouraging thing, and I made that point in my musing, it's actually, you remember the old song from Sergeant Pepper's called It's Getting Better All the Time, and then John chimes in, It Can't Get No Worse.
That's right.
So that was the theme of this. But we are looking at a better market. We're convinced 2014 cannot be as bad as 2013.
Well, you know, you and I spoke at the PDAC, not this year, but the year before, about the fact that there were just way too many companies on the venture exchange, and when the correction comes, a lot of those companies are going to disappear. Do you think we're at the point now where the majority of the chafe, if you will, is gone, and what we're left with now are companies that are going to be able to sustain themselves through the long term?
No, not at all. We still have about the same number of companies. The problem is we have the TMX, which runs the Toronto Exchange and the Toronto Venture Exchange. That's a listed company on the Toronto Exchange. There is an extreme conflict of interest because that company needs to declare a profit every quarter, and it makes its profit by fees. And the longer it can keep these bad companies around, the more fees it continues to collect. That's why we're very hopeful that some of these alternative exchanges are going to succeed now. And they still, the CSE has only about 200 companies with low liquidity, but it's got Ned Goodman of Dundee behind it. So we hope that gives it some impetus. We need competition. As a libertarian, a free market capitalist, I welcome competition, and we need something that can compete with a venture exchange, which I really think this is unholy. Mm-hmm. The fact that that's what's going on. They keep making it easier to finance and keep these companies around, and it does no good for the overall market.
No, absolutely. And just so the listeners know, I mean, the TSX was off 129.8 points today, the down 268.22, the NASDAQ 129.79 down today. Everybody was down today. Even the TSX off today almost 11 points. So it is significant when you see these kinds of the corrections. Is this the kind of thing that's going to scare investors away from dealing with commodities, though?
Oh, this is all about the day traders, I think, today, mm-hmm. Dave. You know, people got spooked and there was a sell-off. We had a little bit of a rally at the end of the day. We'll see if it has any legs. I mean, the overall markets, the major markets, need a healthy 10 to 30% correction. We haven't had that for a while. The problem is we've got the U.S. Fed still creating this stock market bubble with zero interest rates. The only thing that people can put their money into that can make money is the stock market, and the Fed continues to support that. If they take us off quantitative easing, here comes a market correction, and you want to bail in equities as quickly as you can before that happens.
Mm-hmm. So if I'm just getting into it now, if I'm looking at a place to put some money that I think can grow for me for my retirement or for my long term, where would I be putting that money right now?
Well, I would suggest you talk to your certified financial advisor, because that's not me, Dave.
That's not your game. Okay. Well, good. I'm glad. You know what? I appreciate your candor and your honesty. I do have to ask you, though. There's a midterm election coming up down there, isn't there?
There certainly is.
How's that boiling down for you? I mean, I know you're a libertarian, and a lot of the stuff that the federal government's been doing down there right now, quite frankly, is meddling, right? So I want to get your take on that.
Well, I think historically in midterm elections, the president's party will take a bath. That looks like that is likely to happen, because we have this extreme displeasure by the majority of Americans against Obamacare and socialized medicine. Mm-hmm. In my state of New Mexico, we have a very strong libertarian candidate running for the U.S. Senate on the Republican ticket. His name is David Clements, and I am a strong supporter of David's, and we hope that we can get him through the Republican primary and on the main ballot, and then we'll go after the Obama supporting liberal in the U.S. Senate. So,
do you think I read a piece from Barry Goldwater, but from 1960, and he was talking about how the ultra conservative right wing religious contingency of the Republican Party was going to be just a death knell for the Republican Party. And we've seen in the last decade or so the strong push, if you will, from the religious right, mm-hmm. and the Tea Partiers, if you will. Do you think that's eroding support for the Republicans?
Well,
from conservative Republicans,
It's split the Republican Party is what it has done. You have a libertarian wing of the Republican Party, mm-hmm. then you have a Christian right wing, and then you have the Tea Partiers, which would be more towards the libertarian wing. But and then you have the middle of the road Republicans. The problem with the Republican Party over the last dozen years or so, it's split into factions, and mm-hmm. it has not been able to rally those factions. I am a supporter of neither party. I think the Republicans, as they exist today, are basically just as bad as the Democrats for mm-hmm. the well-being of our country. It's all about a social agenda and taking from the rich and giving it to the poor. And, we'll see what happens, but certainly the rallying factor this year will be people's displeasure with Obamacare, and at this stage it looks like the Democrats will take the usual bath. This is what usually happens in mid presidential tenure, mid-year elections.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's been a great time talking to you, but Mick, always look forward to it. And any idea what we'll be talking about next week?
We'll talk commodities. We'll talk the venture exchange. We didn't touch on oil and gas today. They both were up over the week.
We got time. But, we still got time, Mick. Let's do it.
Yeah, well, okay. So oil and gas, which, you know, we really like to cover the main commodities, which would be gold to precious metals, gold into precious metals, copper, because it is Dr. Copper with a PhD in economics,
right.
And the oil and gas market. And the oil and gas market's probably the thing most driven by geopolitical events.
Mm-hmm.
We had both Brent and WTI up about 3% over last week. WTI today about 104, Brent 108. We noticed that arbitrage continues to decline. Henry Hub gas 460, essentially flat over the week as inventories will continue to rise in the low season. So it's somewhat surprising to me that the oil prices have not reacted to this geopolitical these geopolitical events in the Ukraine,
mm-hmm.
Because, you know, a significant portion of Western Europe's oil, but especially its natural gas, comes through through pipelines in Ukraine.
That's right.
So we're a little far removed from that in the U.S., but it still is surprising to me we haven't seen rises in oil prices of any significance during...
Well, there was some mention earlier in the week by the president saying that they were going to be discussing exports of natural gas, liquefied natural gas,
mm-hmm.
and more oil to Western Europe so that they could, you know, lessen their dependence, if you will, on Russia. And I know there was a pushback from Russia on that, saying that they would never be able to supply what they need. But there's already a move ahead. I know here in Canada, the Prime Minister has been talking with the EU. We just signed a trade deal with them. One of the things as part of that deal, of course, is the liquefied natural gas that we'll be shipping from our West Coast if that gets
mm-hmm.
up in Kitimat. So do you think we can severely impact the amount of natural gas and oil that the Russians are giving?
No, certainly in the midterm, but not at all in the short term. You know, I mean, LNG is the answer to a lot of these problems, especially in the United States, where we have this glut of gas. You know, gas sells for $15 to $17 in the rest of the world, and it's $4.60 in the U.S.
Right.
And that basically is an infrastructure problem. We don't have the ability to liquefy that and put it on tankers and ship it. So until that is resolved, and that's not going to be a quick fix, we really cannot impact those markets very much. So, you know, the U.S. could be a gas exporting country right now, and we don't have the infrastructure to do it,
mm-hmm.
and nor do you have sufficient infrastructure in Canada to do it. It's all built out. You know, we are building, Cheniere Energy's building an LNG plant just offshore in Louisiana, and you've
mm-hmm.
got the one out on the West Coast there, but those things are still pretty much a drop in the bucket.
No, absolutely. Well, I know that our former Prime Minister made a speech the other day talking about how Canada and North America really needs to become the fuel provider for the developed world. And we do have the position to do that. But the biggest problem, he said, and you just mentioned it yourself, is the lack of infrastructure.
Mm-hmm. And then we have a president here who bows to his far left eco-fascist wing, and we're still trying to get this Keystone Pipeline approved. I mean, it's just tragic what's going on there.
Mm-hmm. Well, even the CIA apparently was speaking up about the Keystone on Tuesday.
Well, the entire government says they're for it, but then Obama keeps refusing to sign it. So
mm-hmm.
we'll see.
So what should we be looking for next week then? We're going to be looking ahead to, is there any big news coming down the pipe that you
I have no idea, Dave. You know, this will always, I think, kind of be a spur of the moment, whatever seems to catch our fancies. We will talk about commodities. We will talk about the venture exchange, and who knows, maybe it'll be Goldcorp, Cisco, and Yamana again, but we'll find something else to talk about.
Oh, there's always something to talk about. Always a pleasure talking to you, Mick. It's Mickey Fulp. He is the Mercenary Geologist. The website is www.mercenarygeologist.com. Is that correct, Mick?
That's correct.
And there you go. And you can also follow him at Mercenary Geologist on Twitter. I find if you just type in Mickey Fulp, it'll just show you his Twitter handle. Mickey, again, always a pleasure to talk to you. And as I told the listeners earlier, we did record the interview. We will have that available to you. And folks, when you go to the website, you'll be able to get these interviews as well as Mickey's musings, which I would recommend you check out the Mercenary Musings as well at themercenarygeologist.com. Thanks again, Mickey. We will talk to you next week, sir.
I look forward to it. Thanks a lot, Dave.
Thank you, Mick.